I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. If you saw a 66-year-old man with a thin mustache, a baseball cap with a Scum of the Earth logo on it, and a homemade sign that read, "I'm not psycho, hitchhiking," would you stop and pick him up? Well, that man was filmmaker John Waters, and 21 rides did just that as he hitched 2 years ago from his home in Baltimore to his apartment in San Francisco. And what happened was nothing like a John Waters movie. He writes about all the nice people he met in his new book, Carsick. It begins, though, with a series of stories about the best and worst that could have happened. A drug dealer agreeing to fund his new movie, meeting his favorite porn star, Johnny Davenport, running into Edith Massey, the egg lady from Pink Flamingos, and being forced to watch an endless loop of It's a Wonderful Life. John Waters joins us on Radio Times to talk about what he calls his hobo-homo journey across America. And John Waters, a great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on
Radio Times. And I came in a car.
You did come in a car. There are no more hitchhikers anymore. What happened?
Well, I think all the Texas Chainsaw Massacre hitchhikers and the Hitcher, the movie, serial killers. But I think all those people were always there. I think hitchhiking was always a little dangerous, but maybe that's part of the appeal of it. I didn't have a scary ride. I imagined all sorts of scary rides in the beginning of the book where I try to pick the 15 best and worst rides I could possibly get. But I think people that pick up hitchhikers are good people. They're usually, they've survived something. They want to help somebody. And a lot of people, they might have known who I was maybe when I got in the car, but driving by at 60 miles an hour to see me standing there in the middle of Route 70 in Kansas, why would that be me?
Well, especially when it's pouring rain.
Well,
it seems like it rained through a lot of your
first 2 days solid. It rained. I mean, the kind of rain where they say you get a bulletin on your phone from flash flood warning. And just standing there drenched, it was the only thing I hadn't imagined. The sign just fell apart. I learned you can't hitchhike and carry an umbrella and a sign. You need three arms to do that.
Do you pick up hitchhikers?
I have, yes. I don't see many anymore. In Baltimore, if you're hitchhiking, you're a prostitute, pretty much. You know, a prostitute, as I said, without internet connections. So I don't really see them that much. I would. I only saw one the whole way to California.
And really?
I am sort of embarrassed to admit, I said to the guy, don't pick them up. Hitchhikers are selfish. We got a ride. We don't want to have to share.
You don't want to share a car with somebody.
No.
You did hitchhike. I think like a lot of, you and I are essentially the same age, a lot of people in the 60s and 70s, that's how we got around.
Yeah, it was normal to hitchhike. My parents weren't upset by it. We hitchhiked home from school. They expected us to. There wasn't a carpool. You hitchhiked home. And, you know, a lot of times people's parents pick you up or not. Other people pick you up, too, the people you didn't tell your parents about. That's why parents never imagined the lunatics that were out there picking up hitchhikers.
They had no idea.
No, but all hitchhikers learn to deal with that. You get hit on, you just say no or yes. It just depends how school was that day.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you said it and sort of in your mid-60s. You just felt like your life was sort of scheduled, that you needed to do something to kind of shake things up.
My life is completely planned and scheduled to the point of ridiculousness. So I thought, what would it be like to just give all that up? To just, because and what's ridiculous, people said, how long is it going to take you? I don't know. I couldn't plan that. You know, my calendar was once blank, literally blank, because you couldn't say, I'm going to be in this city, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, because you had no idea. And the first couple of days, I thought, this is going to take a year, because it's much harder to hitchhike on the East Coast, and you know, it gets easier as you go west. Not that easy ever, though.
Well, you seem to be, or at least you describe yourself as not just a backseat driver, but also a bit of a control freak.
Well, I guess I'm a control freak, but it's impossible to be a control freak when you're hitchhiking, because it's up to them. You can't say, pull off here, or let's sort of drive. Look out! You want to not yell Shangri-La songs. Look out! Which I want to do. I'm in a friend's car every second. I'm yelling for them to be careful because I'm always at the wheel myself or in the back seat. Unlike Australia, you know, in Australia, if you get in a cab and you don't get in the front seat with the driver, they think you're snobby.
Oh, interesting.
And I said, are you kidding? In Baltimore, if you got in the front seat, they'd shoot you. They'd think you're robbing them.
Do people listen to the radio when they're driving across the country? Never?
Well, at least when you pick up a hitchhiker, they don't, because it's sort of polite, you talk. And it's hard to talk over the radio. No, I don't think ever. And in the good and best parts, I imagined a song that came on every single ride. In real life, I don't think the radio was ever on.
you brought along something called a fame kit. I mean, I don't know if this is exactly cheating or not.
Well, it wasn't cheating. It was a survival. Everybody has a way to, if the police stop you. And it worked. The fame kit was my Directors Guild of America cover. It's so ridiculous. My Academy of Arts and Science. You know, I'm an Oscar voter. Therefore, I am allowed to hitchhike. And the cop just laughed. No, he actually did the opposite. He read it very seriously. And he looked all through them. And then he says, well, it doesn't say you're a professional hitchhiker.
Oh.
And that's when I knew he had a sense of humor. So I said, well, that means you could give me a ride. And he said, get in.
And he did. And I mean, it seems like the cops were pretty friendly and even helpful to
you. Well, most saw me, but whenever I saw a cop, I had a sign that said writing hitchhiking book, which never worked to get a ride, but worked with cops. Because they thought, oh, I'm not getting involved in that. Yeah, and also where you stand. You can't go down on the freeway and stand there. I mean, but I always stood on that sign that's right on the entrance ramp that says, it is illegal to pass this sign. And go. So I stood right before it, leaning on it. At one point, I was there 10 hours. It started to get loose. It was really embarrassing. I had worn the highway sign down from worry.
I'd love to have you read a section from your book. And as I said, and as you write, the beginning are sort of fantasy trips. And this is
the first ride I get.
This is the first ride you get in the sort of fantasy trip.
Yeah, the best that could happen, you know, by a guy named Harris. This is Laura. Harris introduces us. And, of course, you know John Waters and his films. She smiles a warm welcome, and I can't help but notice she smells like pot. I'm going to give him $5 million to make his new film, he casually mentions, and she doesn't look particularly surprised. Oh, that's sweet, Laura says, hardly looking out from the pot of black tulips, my favorite kind, she just placed artfully on an outdoor table. We've been looking to invest in films for a long time, she offers happily. I grin, but remain silent and stupefied. Stupefaction. Is that? Yeah, that's okay. You know, you write words, you don't say them out loud. I'll make some lunch, offers Harris, before trotting off to the main farmhouse to prepare as Laura follows, eager to help. I just sit there in amazement at my good fortune. This is my first ride, and already I'm going to be back in the movie business. Harris and Laura soon return, and we feast on delicious chicken salad made from free-range birds that Laura confides she strangled with her own hands just this morning. After dessert of freshly picked blueberries, Harris carefully folds his cloth napkin from Mardix, he proudly announces, a recently closed restaurant much loved by downtown Baltimore bohemians, and says, let's take a walk, John. I eager follow him to a remote point on his property, and Harris reveals that we're now going to dig up the cash. I keep my mouth shut. Oh, honey, he yells to Laura, call up that FedEx place and make sure our buddy gets his ass to work. Tell him we got a special shipment coming up.
And that's John Waters reading from the fantasy version of his new book, Carsick, about his actual hitchhiking across the country. You actually do have a movie, Fruitcake, that you, I don't know how much in readiness it is.
Well, it's not. I got a complete development deal to make it, a Hollywood development deal, and then the entire business kind of collapsed and changed, and it never got made. So in this book, they give me the budget for it right away.
The drug dealer gives you.
And he says you don't have to ever take notes from us. And we don't really care if it makes money. You know, the things that nobody ever says in Hollywood for good reason, right?
What I love is a little bit of a side there where she's serving the chicken that she had just strangled that morning.
Well, I like to throw in some comedy there, you know, especially, I guess that's free-range chicken. It was a happy chicken working around a drug dealer's farm. Well, but all the chickens were made to be eaten. I mean, Edith says that in Pink Flamingos.
Exactly.
There will always be eggs. There will always be chickens. I'm not a radical PETA member. I'm more radical. I think all animals should be loose, biting people.
It's funny because your book begins with these two sort of dark and the more sort of happy versions of what would happen if you took off hitchhiking across the country. And the New York Times, in reviewing your book, that reviewer said, it's as if Thor Heyerdahl had filled the first 200 pages of Kon-Tiki with an optimistic fictional dream about his grueling raft voyage that involved a minibar, the Swedish bikini team, and an Evinrude outboard motor, and then a pessimistic one that involved termites, typhoons, and a vengeful giant squid with a special animus towards Norwegians. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. So it was, I always knew I was going to write the book that way. The only fear I ever had was suppose the first ride in the real part picked me up and said, I'm going all the way to San Francisco, I'll take you. And they were boring.
Right.
I would have had to jump out of the car, which would have been funny too, escaping someone that wanted to give you a ride. That never happened.
You got a first, your actual first ride outside of your house in Baltimore, and a lovely, it was raining.
It was a single African-American mother with her child taken to daycare. And everybody said, no woman will ever pick you up. No, a trucker picked me up, a cop, a frackers, a biker, a coal miner, a preacher's wife. I had a very, very varied group of people. All completely unjudgmental, all completely open-minded, so different than the bad cliche of what intellectuals think of middle America.
Was that a surprise to you? I mean, to find that people were so generous. I mean, if you're going to pick somebody up, unless you are a mass murderer or something, I mean, you probably are interested in people.
Yeah, they like people. So it didn't really surprise me. But I guess the attitude surprised me, that you really can't tell anymore what people believe. And some Republicans or Democrats didn't make any difference. They just didn't like freeloaders, and they liked people that said what they meant and believed, stood up for it, and worked. People, they don't like freeloaders. America does not like people that don't work. Well, not that can't work, that don't work.
One person, a guy whose actual name is Brett, is it Biddle?
Well, he said his name, and he gave an interview. So I call him the Corvette Kid.
Corvette Kid. I mean, he picked you up twice. He picked you up and then swung back.
Swung a long way back. He drove 80 miles an hour for 48 hours and caught up with me in Denver and gave me more of a ride. He just was on an adventure. We had a great time. He was a 20-year-old Republican official. I think he's no longer in office. I hope I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't see the election smear campaign against him with my picture. Right. His parents were alarmed. And we just had a great time. It was an adventure. We had a really good time. And we're still friends. And we're always going to remember that. He was going to lunch at the Subway when he picked me up in Myersville. And I just kept talking. He didn't know who I was. He never heard any of the movies. And drove me to Ohio. And then went home and then was bored.
And came back and drove and picked you up.
And the worst thing is nobody realized. Then he had to drive all the way back by himself from San Francisco. That's a long drive.
You were worried that his mother was going to Google your name.
Well,
and
I didn't.
Then, you know.
Well, she probably did, because I never got to talk to her. And but they were horrified, because especially when he went back. They thought, who knows what they thought. But we were laughing about it because we realized what it looked like when a 66-year-old and a 20-year-old man checking a hotel together.
In Reno, right?
Anywhere. Really. But we laughed about it, and we realized that people could read a lot into it, and it was totally innocent and funny. So we laughed about it. We understood that some people were not going to understand.
Well, we're almost up in a break here, but then you sent him ahead to go to Europe.
Then I just gave him the keys to my apartment. When he told his mother that, they really said, say it out loud on the speakerphone what you just said so your father can hear that.
Oh, goodness. That's John Waters, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. We're talking about his adventures, such as they are or such as they were, as he hitchhiked across the country. It's part of his book called Carsick. And the book also includes some fictional scenarios, some worst case and best case scenarios. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. Much more after this short break.
Supporting WHYY, Westchester University has been offering graduate studies for over 50 years. Today, Westchester has over 70 graduate degree and certificate programs in business and public affairs, health, visual and performing arts, education, arts and sciences, and their new doctorate of nursing practice. With campuses in suburban Chester County, the new Center City, Philadelphia location, or online. Details at wcupa.edu/grad. Graduate education at Westchester University. Learn more.
I'm Jesse Thorne. The rapper Vince Staples is 20 years old. As a teenager, he got jumped into a gang in Long Beach, where he's from, and he never expected to become a rapper. But unlike some rappers, he doesn't think street life is anything to brag about.
You can't be hard 24/7. It's not fun. It's not cool. You just look corny, because that's how you die. Those are the ones that die.
Vince Staples, in the next Bullseye from NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The world's only wooden whaling ship has been restored and is about to set sail, but this time as a floating museum to teach people about whales, not to hunt them.
That's your cargo today. It's history. Some of them are inspiring and exciting. Some of them are terrible that we need to remember so that we don't repeat.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with John Waters, filmmaker, actor, writer. His cult film classics include Pink Flamingos, Hairspray, Polyester, Crybaby, Serial Mom, and A Dirty Shame. We're talking about his new book called Carsick, John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. It's about the 9 days that he spent actually hitchhiking across the country, and then a bunch of fantasy scenarios about the worst or best things that could have happened to him. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. I'd love to have you read this section, and I have to say I've read it several times, and it just leaves me in hysterics. So go ahead,
thank
John
you,
Waters.
Thank you. This is a worse ride, I imagine, a really terrible one. Finally, a car stops, and I rush to get in. By now, I'd accept a ride from Freddy Krueger. But no, this guy is a different kind of horror. I can smell liquor immediately when I get in the car. Old sub wrappers are on the floor, mixed in with empty half-pint bottles of whiskey. The air conditioner is on so high that I can see my breath when I open my mouth to thank him for picking me up. He slurs his name, Stu, when he introduces himself and pulls out in traffic without turning on his blinker once. I tell him I'm headed to I-70 West. There Stands the Glass by Webb Pierce, one of the most god-awful country songs about liquor, comes on the radio, or at least I think it is on the radio, until I see Stu is playing a homemade CD of this dreadful song over and over. Where are the seat belts? I cry in nervousness after fumbling around both sides of the passenger seat. I cut them out, he admits with a boozy laugh. I hate those things. How am I supposed to mix drinks all strapped up? I realize quickly that ride number one is not only an ass, but probably driving with a revoked license. I got 11 DUIs, he brags, but screw 'em. Look ahead, I plead, realizing he had his eyes off the road for quite some time. Oh, don't you worry, he lectures, wagging his fingers as he careens onto the entrance ramp of the Baltimore Beltway. I drive good when I'm drunk. Those Mothers Against Drunk Drivers bitches make me mad. M-A-D mad, he adds, and bursts into plastered laughter at his own bad joke. It gets worse.
It does get worse. And we picked out a section that was relatively clean for on the air. The idea of being picked up by some drunken driver.
Was what you fear.
Cut out his seatbelts.
Yeah. I did get picked up for real by a driver once. And it's in the first part, where the epilogue, where he said, see that emission sticker thing? And I said, yeah. He said, I drew that. I just didn't give you exact, oh, what a clever man you are.
Do you have a fear of goiter? Goiters?
I do. I am afraid of goiters. I don't know why. My assistants make fun of me and say, you can't catch a goiter. I said, don't be so sure
about it.
In the book, I catch a goiter and it explodes. And I have flapping goiter skin when I'm trying to get a ride, which puts a big damper on trying to get picked up hitchhiking. Yes, I have fear of goiters.
And does that come from some childhood trauma?
Yes. A childhood, when we went to the Polyette, was the little store where you bought penny candy, the man that lived across the street, unfortunately, had a giant goiter in his crotch. Ooh. And all children would stare at him and say, what is that? When the parents would make you look away. I never got over. Goiter man.
Oh. Well, there's...
It came in handy.
That's what fiction is for, right?
Yes, yes.
Let me see what Steve has to say. Steve calling us from Linwalt, New Jersey. Go ahead, Steve. You're on Radio Times.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I too hitchhiked when I was 20 years old, and again when I was 21. When I was 20, I hitchhiked around the entire country, and it took me way more than 9 days. So my question originally was going to, what's your favorite part of the country? Of course, I got to experience it a little longer. It could take me a lot longer to get there. But I was just curious what his favorite part of this United States was.
My favorite part of the country is where I got picked up, and my least favorite is Bonner Springs, where I was stuck forever. But I think Kansas is amazing because it is so long and so barren and so minimalist and threatening and weather extremes. Everything about it. It made me not especially want to live there, but driving through it is a great experience.
Steve, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You got picked up by this indie band, and I was they then tweeted or sort of posted
yeah,
the fact
go,
that
magic.
They,
yeah,
here
yeah.
we go, magic. Yeah. And their description of you getting into their van was getting all tangled up in their seatbelts.
Yeah, because I didn't have
stuff.
To do it, and they had all my bags, and I was so happy. I've been standing there a long time, and I finally go, oh, people in showbiz picked me up. And they drove past me and thought, that is that trouble
can't be.
And they came back, and the door slid open, and they said, where are you from, sir? And I said, Baltimore, and then they knew it was me.
Wow.
And so they were great. And I've seen them since. They came to one of the readings in New York. I had a dinner party for them in San Francisco when they were on tour. They had been touring for 2 years, you know, and rock and roll bands, they do that. That's
yes.
what you do. You
yes.
never stop touring.
The one of the fantasy parts of the book is a pet rescuer person, and then actually a real pet rescuer.
I imagine a horrible one. I imagine the most horrible. That's the grossest chapter in the book.
It
I think,
is
with tapeworms and fixing dogs' parts and coyotes eating dogs, and then the people that picked me up later in real life were the most lovely people. They were at my signing yeah. last night in San Francisco, in Baltimore.
Wow.
And they were a real pet rescuer. And they said, yes, that three-legged poodle that jumped in my lap and kissed me when I got in the van, which, believe me, I don't usually respond well to that, is still alive and now feels famous because of the book, which I thought was funny.
The dog feels
yeah,
famous.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And in the, I guess it's the fictional part, the John Waters says, all pets hate me. Is that
pets
true?
Pets do hate me.
Do they?
For some reason. And I always say to all animals, heal, which makes, and I can't resist saying to every friend when I go in their house that I have a dog or cat, is that the same one? Which makes them crazy. But I just like to see how insane that makes them. I don't dislike animals. I don't want one.
Well, you want them
I
to be
don't
free.
Feel
right?
lonely. Yes, but I do want them running in packs, biting people like dogs in Bucharest, wild dogs. I don't be sentenced to a lifetime of human caresses in some S&M relationship. But it's fine if people have them, but I don't get it. But yeah, I go into someone's house and the goldfish will hurl himself at the bowl at me.
It seems like in your fantasy trip, that the best trips, there was lots of sex and money for your film. Yeah?
It was sex, but it was comic sex in a way. You know, I have sex in a demolition derby car
yes,
while the race is winning.
Right.
I am picked up by an exhibitionist bank robber and his girlfriend who gets sexually aroused by robbing banks. The worst stuff, I'm entrapped in Kansas in a bathroom where sodomy for straight or gay is still illegal. And taken to this horribly homophobic jail where they give you saltpeter. So the sex is funny in the book, hopefully.
Right.
Hopefully.
Again, that's John Waters, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, author of a new book. You've probably heard about it. He's been making the rounds on the circuit, as they say, the book called Carsick, John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Back in your youth, I guess,
yeah. You
hitchhiked with Patty Hearst.
No, that was in my adulthood. I hitchhiked with Patty Hearst. She's my friend. I didn't know her in my youth. I hitchhiked when she visited in Provincetown, and there's this one beach I like to go to, but you have to have a sticker. And so I used to take people on little hitchhiking dates. It was like a day trip. And she went. I think she was reluctant, but and her husband gave me great grief about it later and said, haven't we had enough trouble? And I said, no, but I haven't. Right. So I think once we did it, she wanted to get it over with. But somebody picked us up, and the guy, Patricia got in the back, and I got in the front, like I'm, in case there's trouble. And he kept looking over at me, and I think he knew who I was. And finally, he said, are you John Waters? And
yeah.
I said, yes. And I said, and that is Patricia Hearst. And he looked in the rearview mirror. And Patty just, as a great comedian, said, he made me do it. Which, you know, and the guy,
perfect,
I'm sure he
right.
went home and said, oh, I picked up John Waters and Patricia Hearst hitchhiking today. And said, oh, sure, right, you know. But she, and then Bernie, her husband, who was very nice, said, oh, please, don't do that again. And I understood why.
Let me read a Facebook page quote from Jay saying, John Waters busted me smoking my very first joint in the ladies' room of an old gay bar in Baltimore circa 1991. Does that
What do you mean bust him? You think I would object? I don't smoke pot because it just makes me nervous, but I have pot for my guests and all my homes. I was in the ladies' room?
I don't know.
Could be true, believe me. Who knows?
Is there a certain kind of etiquette if someone does pick you up as a hitchhiker, a sort of responsibility that you have to your ride?
Yeah, to either, if they want to talk, to listen, and if they want you to talk, to talk. Yes, they don't pick you up to sit there in silence. They don't. I never had anybody that said, would you take over and drive while I slept? I would have.
Yeah.
Only the two, a Marine girl, a woman and her boyfriend, not her boyfriend, her friend, said I could spend the night with him. I didn't because I should have because I almost got stuck that night. But another guy, the male nurse that had... He said, I covered myself in tattoos to punish myself. Now I'm over that.
Oh.
And he kind of said that he would come back and check on me if I didn't have a ride. I could stay at his house. I don't know if he ever did because I waited a long time. And I kept thinking, haven't you finished dinner yet? But I eventually got a ride with a coal miner.
And two frackers picked you up. I guess two.
More than frackers. It was a car. It was a van load of four people that were going to the fracking community to build temporary housing, and they had done it in Iraq and all war-torn areas. They were chasing their pot of gold. They were great. You know, they smoked pot. That was the only one. I sat in there was no room except I sat in a van in the little glove compartment in between the two front seats, and we saw so many signs that said click it or ticket. You know, there was no possible way. And in real life, I would never do that. I would be so frightened, but I was so happy to get a ride. They were going a long distance. They were lovely people, and I hope they found their dream.
Yeah, their dream of money.
Of making money, yeah.
Yes.
They all were, you know, they had all their stuff packed in there. They were going there big time to try to do this. They were like, traveling people that you know, follow the next thing for temporary housing. So I respected them. I thought they were great.
Did this trip, I don't know if you needed to renew your faith in the American people. I don't know if that was one of your missions on this trip, but did it?
I had that anyway, but it reinforced what I believed even more than I thought, that anybody that says flyover people, what jerks they are. Because, still the term white trash is a term that supposedly liberals get away with. I think it's as offensive as the N-word. You know, it's, what do you mean? You can't say that. You can't call people trash, you know. So, to me, the people were all types. I mean, I don't think there were any nationality or... I had single. I didn't have any gay people.
Well, that's interesting.
Which I don't think. You know, I didn't ask for gay ID. And the preacher's wife said to me right in the beginning, are you gay? And I said, yes. She said, good. Wonder why good. Like, you know, I don't know why, especially she said I was going to do her hair or something. I don't know. You know, to use a cliche. Right. But she was very sweet. And people were just nice. They didn't seem to... Even they never asked me celebrity questions, even if they knew who I was.
That.
They didn't say, what's Johnny Depp like? What's it? They didn't ask the kind of questions that people usually do ask.
Yeah.
They weren't that interested. And I didn't feel like talking about all that. I always have to do that. So I wanted to hear their stories and tell me what their life was like. And people want to talk about their life. Everybody wants to be interviewed in a weird way.
Yeah, absolutely. You also were picked up by a couple of what seemed like straight guys. And they all, as you wrote, they were all bragging about their wives, how much they loved their wives,
how smart
they were.
Mostly middle-aged heterosexual men picked me up. Not mostly, but a good number. And every one of them talked about how much the first, not how hot she was, but how smart she was, and then how great she was. And I have a feeling it wasn't their first wife, but I'm not saying they didn't have young trophy wives. It was just they had maybe gotten over drugs or some problem or something, or they're raising other people's kids together. You know, they had reached another level in their life. And I think that these were bad boys that the wife put some brakes on, and they wanted those brakes. They were too smart to be racist. You know, they just couldn't do that stuff anymore.
You were picked up by a couple of farmers, and there was one in particular where he told you about, I guess it was pigs and M&Ms.
Yeah,
that you can use M&Ms to, what, train pigs?
If any pig, a small pig, you just give it M&Ms, the next time you get it will follow you for the rest of your life. Anytime you're in the room and remember you. So that should be an M&M ad.
It should
just
be.
Just all people walking around with little pigs following them.
I was wondering, too, whether you felt you had lived a bit of a cloistered life, because it doesn't sound like you had ever been in a Kmart.
No, Walmart.
Or Walmart, rather, until you went on this trip.
No, I hadn't. And my sister always says, you were such a snob. I'm not a snob. I don't buy in bulk. You know, I bought a single leaf of arugula when I go to the store. I had never been in Walmart, and this one was in a military base, so it was like a porn movie. I couldn't find anybody to wait on me. And then they say, oh, they don't have salespeople in Walmart. That's why it's cheap. It was all right. It did have a lot of stuff. It was just too big for me. It was like too overwhelming.
Too much stuff.
I like a store that has six things, and I want all of them.
Was it lonely, though? I mean, there were times when it was 10 hours where you were...
That isn't lonely to me. I even say in the book at one point, so what? I'm alive. I'm free. I'm doing this. Half my friends are dead. My life has been great. Feel good, which I did. There was moments of despair when no one's going to pick you up. You just, you know, the wind's hitting you. It's raining. You think, oh, my God, am I going to sleep in the woods tonight? And I'd have to hang around bathrooms. When people come out asking for rides, like such a pervert. And I don't think I was lonely. No, all the country songs are about the lonely highway.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
Well, I knew where I was going, and I was coming right back. Once I got to San Francisco, they flew me first class to accept the fashion Oscars for Johnny Depp and Ray Kawakubo with, like, cars picking me up and everything. So I've always
You live in many worlds, don't you?
No, except the middle. You know, I fled the middle. And I'm fine in low light. I'm fine in prison, and I'm fine at when I was at the jury at the Cannes Film Festival. But the middle, I always think I have trouble with. But the middle has changed.
You were driving the middle.
Now I was with the middle for the first time. And the middle has radically changed since I was young. They are not so judgmental. Now, all I'm saying is the type of people to pick up hitchhikers, which is a special type. And I don't know if they're liberal or conservative with politics. I felt like I had all that. I had every possibility of that. But they liked people, and they were forgiving, and they were willing to give people a second chance. And they wanted to help me. They didn't know. They thought I was an old guy that was hitchhiking.
In fact, one guy gave you $10,
Oh,
right?
A couple people tried to give me money. And at first, I didn't know what they were doing. Why are they doing this? And I try to say I was a film director. And go, this poor guy is off his meds and thinks he's Fellini.
Let me get Chuck from Center City to join us. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
John Waters, I've been a huge fan forever, and actually we have something in common. My first and perhaps my only porn crush was on John Davenport, and I'm just wondering that you met him, like what that was like.
I never met John Davenport.
Only in your fantasy world.
If you look in the, If you look in the beginning of the book, it says Johnny Davenport, Connie Francis, and Gertrude Beneshevsky are used fictitiously in this book. Johnny Davenport, I never met. And I did sort of try to find him. I'm sure that was not his real name. And I heard what his real name was, but I don't know if that's true. And I don't know where he is. And but he was a great porn legend. And I think it was probably true. He was gay for pay. He was, I think the way I portrayed him was could be true. Not that he had... sexual relations with aliens, which I have in the book, which leads me to have a magic anus, and then that anus sings a duet with Connie Francis. Yeah, so, I mean, that is certainly parody.
Indeed. Chuck, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We're almost up in a break here, but you didn't tell your mom, that you were doing this.
Well, I thought my mom was not in great health, and I thought, well, she need to worry about that. But then the story broke, and I had to have my sisters tell her. And she said, oh, well, your cousin rode his bike across America. She still wasn't uptight about hitchhiking.
Let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. John Waters is our guest. We're talking about his new book. It's called Carsick. John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. Also, his films include Pink Flamingos, of course, Hairspray, Polyester, Crybaby, Serial Mom, A Dirty Shame, which I did see at the Toronto Film Festival when it had its debut many years ago. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, and get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, introducing the first ever Lincoln MKC with the all-new available 2.3-liter EcoBoost powertrain. For the power and poise to handle any driving situation. More available at Lincoln.com.
British Army officer T.E. Lawrence was immortalized in the 1962 film Lawrence of Arabia. On the next Fresh Air, Scott Anderson, author of Lawrence in Arabia, tells us how the real Lawrence prepared himself for greatness even as a boy.
He would try to stay awake for days at a time. He would deny himself food, deny himself water, for as long as he could physically endure.
Join us. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
A student with a diploma in life.
I'm still in high school trying to get the diploma this year, so I just want to be there for my daughter. I don't want her to be alone, cry alone. I want to be the greatest father, you know?
Marvin Ramos, 18 years old, sharing his journey and struggle to be a new dad. A dad-to-dad conversation on growing up fast. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Amtrak, featuring patripsbytrain.com, offering train packages to destinations along Amtrak's Keystone service line. More information on available excursion packages at patripsbytrain.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. 2 years ago in the spring of 2012, our guest John Waters hitchhiked across America. He was picked up by farmers, a small town elected official, an indie rock band, and ordinary folks who were generous and kind. And he chronicles his adventures and his insights in a new book called Carsick, John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. We have a tweet from Kathy. She says, the first time I hitchhiked, my own mother picked me up. Ouch.
I had one on another show that said that her father picked her up, didn't say one word till they got home, and said, if you ever do that again, I'm breaking your thumbs.
So is this a call to bring back hitchhiking in your book?
I think this summer, everybody, take a little hitchhiking trip. It can be quite modest. It can be 5 miles away. Hitchhike to the mall. Hitchhike, just try it. You need a sign. A sign always helps. And it's a little adventure that you have every day, a little soap opera. You can be in your own reality show.
It sounds like you also were looking to shake your life up a little bit. I mean, just to sort of get out of the scheduled life, even for John Waters.
Yeah, you know, I joke it's my midlife crisis. Other people buy a convertible. I hitchhiked across America and wrote a book about it. It was a little bit, my life is very organized. Everything has gone very well in my life. I'm not misunderstood. People get my career. All my movies are out there. All the books are still in print. So take a chance. Yeah. You know, I think staying home is dangerous if you never go out. If you think, a lot of generations, they get to a point and then they stop caring about what's new. And they stop meeting new people and everything. And I think that's when you start to die.
Yeah. I've heard you on other shows. I've seen you on TV. I mean, and you seem like a happy person.
I am a genuinely
happy person.
I only had to have a real job for about 2 years in my life, and that was in bookstores. And I could go work in a bookstore again if I had to. That'd be fine. I've had a good life. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm walking around like an insane person, like happy every moment, crazy. I mean, I've had sadness. But yes, I've had a good life. I'm very thrilled that all my dreams did come true. And my friends go, I could puke when I hear you say that.
But what did you think? I mean, what did young John Waters think that a 68-year-old John Waters would be doing or be like?
I don't think a young John Waters, I was really pretty nuts when I was young, thought what I would be like when I was 68 years old. I just had then wanted to make a hit underground movie. And then the rest of it, and I always wanted to be a writer, and that's what I am. Basically, I wrote all my movies. So, but I had a career in puppet shows when I was 12 years old.
Oh, did you?
I wrote a story when I was a camp counselor that I read and horrified all the campers, and they called to complain, all the parents. So I always was doing this. It never has really changed. When I was a puppeteer at the end, I'd come out of the stage, which is breaking the wall of puppetry, which I'm not supposed to do.
Indeed.
And say to the kids, stick out your hand, and the dragon, these are hand puppets, will bite your hand for good luck. And a half of the children started crying, and the other half ran to get their hands, and I'm still doing that. There's no difference in what I'm doing today.
Indeed. You dedicate your book to my sisters, Kathy and Trish, and in memory of my brother, Steve.
Yeah, mine who died of a brain tumor younger than me. Very tragedy.
When did he die?
Maybe about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And both my parents died in the letter. The only good thing is they can't read this book.
Do you feel that way?
Yeah. They would be, you know, my sister-in-law wrote and said, Mom would have loved Lucas in chapter 4.
They had to have known.
Course they knew. Yeah, they knew. They didn't know. Yes, of course they knew, and they were proud of me, and there was nothing left unworked out when they died, and
that's
if it was, I made that into my career. I mean, any unworked out items became my career. So, my parents were very supportive, scared of what I did. They wish I made different kind of movies, except for Hairspray. I think their happiest moment was when Hairspray won the Tony Award.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I'm sure they were just so amazed.
Did they understand you, do you think?
Oh, yeah, as much as they could.
As parents can.
I mean, the whole point is, what parent would have been happy their child made pink flamingos. Really, no parent, even the most liberal parent, would not know how to really deal with that. And they never saw it, but they paid for it, and I paid them back every penny with interest.
Wow. We have a tweet from Becca. I adore John Waters. I'm curious why he got started teaching in prisons and what he learned from doing that. And I know you do teach prisoners.
I did teach in prison. I still visit people in prison. If I wasn't a film director, or whatever I do, I would have been a defense lawyer for the despised, damned, and depraved, as Jesse Jackson called his followers. You know, I don't think I would have ended up in prison because my parents made me feel safe. I think a lot of times you end up in prison because your parents didn't make you feel safe. But I'm interested in what happens to people. And, you know, I had a class that was many murderers and did horrible stuff. And I met their parents. And believe me, their parents didn't think that was going to happen. Are, it's as tragic sometimes as the victims' families, you know, that they don't know how to deal with it. I mean, you can see that on all these fake Columbine shootings. The parents that come out are kind of moving. The ones that did it, you know, their children did it. They think, oh, my God. I mean, if even Jeffrey Dahmer's father wrote a really brilliant book about what it was like to be his father, and like, yeah, I was not a great father. I wasn't this bad. You know, I mean, there are kind of limits to how bad are you.
You helped to get a prisoner out of prison.
I did, and he's doing great. He served 27 years for a double murder. He got himself out by all his great work in prison. Right. He's doing great. Owns a house, has a job, works for the prisons now. They rehired him, which is amazing. So he doesn't even have to worry when they say, have you ever been arrested before?
Indeed. Let me get Bob from, looks like, Roebling, New Jersey to join us. Bob, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Hi.
Great topic.
Thanks.
I did a lot of hitchhiking when I was in the military, and I went to school out in Flagstaff, Arizona, and I would hitchhike back to Jersey. And I did get out of a car one time because the guy was so boring.
It was really?
Incredible.
That's funny. I can imagine that, like a crashing bore.
Oh, he had a trailer on the back of his car, and we were going like 45 miles an hour. And it was like being in the Mercury space capsule and you couldn't get out.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, in the book, in the worst chapter, I get picked up by a sports fanatic that will not shut up talking
right.
about sports. It was a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, that's tough. My fantasy ride would have been to be picked up by Gene Shepard.
Oh, wow. He was a storyteller, a radio storyteller.
I thought Gene Shepard was a woman. Now I'm thinking of another writer. Okay. And what would have happened? You would have told him your story?
No, he would have told. He told these great stories, and it would be this wonderful trip back home where I didn't. You know, you just listen to this great storyteller.
Spin out, and apparently that's what he did on the radio all night long in
New
York, something
great.
Like that.
Yeah, wonderful. He wrote a Christmas story.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
Bob.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Thanks so much. Did you want to add something?
No.
Let me ask you, are you surprised, and Pennsylvania is the last state to legalize gay marriage. Of course, you know, we know what happened with the military, and now we've got all these states that are legalizing gay marriage or same-sex marriage. Does that surprise you? Does it make you want to go back in the closet? I don't know if you're ever in the closet.
No, I always say that we have enough gay people. It's not a numbers game. You have to audition now. We have a lot.
Right.
You have to go in front of a panel of experienced perverts. No, I can't understand. It has happened quickly.
Of
all the things, it's great. Because even the Republicans,
is
the more people come out, they know gay people. That's it. And so they think, well, it's in my own family. I know this. That's why it's changed. It had to be both parties do it. It's amazing to me how anybody, straight or gay, you know how hard it is to find somebody to fall in love with. It is not easy. When you do, why would that threaten anybody? Why would someone's love be better than someone else's? That, to me, is astounding. So what? I mean, why would you? I try to tell all gay people that you don't have to get married. Now they can. They meet somebody a week and they get married. And then California, there's no-fault divorce.
That's right.
50-50, I'm telling you, it's a hustler-feeding gold-digger frenzy. Right, be careful.
Would you ever think of getting married, yourself?
I don't need to do that, you know? I believe in love. I believe that you can have a great relationship. My parents had a beautiful 65-year marriage. Or 70, I forget. But, yeah, 70. So I certainly didn't ever grow up torn by divorce or anything, which I know is really tough for people when you're 12 years old especially. But I don't really have I don't like weddings. I'll be honest with you. When you go, I've never had fun at a wedding, gay or straight.
Why is that?
It always seems pressure to be a Hallmark greeting card. I don't know. It can never be that good, and all the families there, and it costs too much money. And
that's
it's
a
like,
lot of money.
And it's, it, I don't know. I think you're asking for trouble. The more money you spend on a wedding, I think you're asking for trouble.
Speaking of which, you were, I don't know if you were the MC, but anyway, some fashion thing that you were at recently.
I was the host of the CFDA Fashion Awards, which are loosely known as the Fashion Oscars.
Yes, and maybe you should say it, but you were talking about, I guess, the cost of
Well,
fashion.
I had to give opening remarks, and I said, let's make fashion cost more this year. I think it seems cheap. Let's make a blouse cost more than a house. And then, of course, I did a thing about you should never be nude, because in fashion, isn't it covering it up? That's the point. Right. But then Rihanna came nude, if you saw her outfit, which was great. But I learned a long time ago, nudity is a threat to my existence. You can't be funny nude. Have you ever
That's
cracked a joke nude? No.
No, Annette.
No. And who laughs with sex? Schizophrenics.
Let me get, looks like Charles from Liberty Corner, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Charles. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I picked up monks hitchhiking.
Monks?
In America?
Monks.
Wow.
In America. And the first one was in 72, and they really didn't say they were monks, but they were took a vow of poverty. Everything had to be a gift, so it was hitchhiking, the food, the place to stay, and they talked about spiritual stuff. So you're in the rain. Well, it was raining for 2 days while they were with us, and he said, boy, this reminds me of Woodstock. If they knew how to pray, they could have stopped the rain. But jumping up and down, yelling, no rain isn't the way to pray. So they wanted to go. They said they had to go. And I felt so bad because it was raining. I give them a ride to the highway, and they're quiet in the back. I'm thinking, I got to bring them back until the rain stops. So we get to the highway. They get their stuff out of the truck, and Peter smiles at me, and I swear the rain stopped in an instant, and the sun came out, and it was a beautiful day.
Wow. How many, wow. You say plural. How many were there?
Yeah, how many monks?
There were three of them, two men and a woman. And they didn't cut their hair at all. The beard, so they were like their feelers.
But did they, in a car, did they have B.O.?
Oh, dear.
Actually, no.
Okay, because that sounded like a possibility, a B.O. possibility.
Oh, dear.
No. And then a couple of years later, I'm home watching TV, and Ruth Montgomery was a Christian psychic. She said in her past lives, she could remember Lazarus. She was Lazarus' sister and remembered Jesus, and they didn't cut their hair or their beards. And they took really good care of it. I said, wow. Because it was kind of like that. Other monks were just a few years ago, and they were somewhere in Baltimore. They had their monastery or something, and that was in Asbury, New Jersey. I picked them up hitchhiking.
Then
later off, I saw the cops giving them a hard time.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Everything goes back to Baltimore, I guess, don't
Well,
worry.
No, but I mean, he sounds like he's had a lot of good hitchhikers. I haven't. How many times do you pick up Buddhist hitchhikers?
Exactly. We have a tweet from Mike. Was the movie Pecker based on your life?
No, because I wasn't naive. Like, Pecker was kind of like an outsider artist. I was praying New York would come and find me. They just didn't. I had to go find them.
Are you going to make another movie?
Who knows? You know, I tried to. I have meetings about them and everything, yeah. But, you know, they want you to make it for what polyester costs these days. They want you to, and I can't be a faux underground filmmaker. I have four employees. I got to, you know. So, who knows? I'm fine. I want to, but if not, you know, I'm booked for the next year.
And are you ready? Your schedule is completely filled up?
I'm back to what it was, right.
Let me get John from Hamilton, New Jersey. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello, John. Am I on?
Yes, you are. Go ahead,
yeah.
John.
Okay, I wanted to ask you, I'm about your age, and I used to hike when I was young and stuff. And did you ever get in a call where the person started talking or acting a certain way where you said, I don't really want to be here with them anymore, and you asked to get out, like, soon, right away? You don't want to do it, but it's like, I got to go.
Well, that's touchy if you ask somebody you want to get out. Then they can get hostile. No, I was in a car once when somebody pulled out a gun and fired it out the window. But it didn't bother me that much. It was Cape Cod. It was, you know, off season. Yeah, and I had one once.
In Cape Cod.
I know. And I had another one once that sped really fast. Not on this trip. This is when I was younger. And that made me nervous. That's the only thing I fear is bad drivers.
John, thank you.
But I didn't say, I didn't like jump out of the car when he was speeding and roll like I have to do in the book, like a stuntman. Just remember that. If you do have to jump out, you roll when you hit the gravel.
The real trip that you took, obviously, is so different from your fantasy trips. Was that okay with you?
I mean, it was fine.
That it was, because reality I, was...
I imagined that it would be great to join this carnival where I was in a freak show as a man with no tattoos.
Yes,
and they
exactly.
put me on a spinning board and threw hatches at me blindfold. I like the idea of that. I don't know that I really want that to happen. So in real life, yeah, it wasn't that extreme. But it was fine. The people were great. The only thing was the incredible tedium of it.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I don't know if these are like friends that you have, but
you certainly
made friends.
Oh, yeah.
These people.
I think these
up.
People will be the rest of my life. They're my friends. And when you pick up somebody hitchhiking, then they, later in a book about it, you know. Yes, it is a little mini drama each time, a little reality show, a little short story that you're in that does bond you, certainly.
And what kind of car do you drive?
I drive a plain brown Buick, so no one could. I couldn't even describe to you my own car.
Really?
It's so plain. Because suppose I want to rob a bank. I don't want people to remember my car. Suppose I do want to do one of these fantasies and do the. And why
this
would
the most
anyone.
Nondescript car
the
there
most
is.
Nondescript car ever. And why would anybody get a vanity license plate? You want one they can't remember. So I don't understand that. I guess that's the lurking closet criminal in me.
Well, John Waters, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you
joining
for
us.
Me. Pick
today.
Up a hitchhiker if you see one.
Absolutely. And again, John Waters' new book is called Carsick, and it's subtitled John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. His movies include Pink Flamingos, Hairspray, Polyester, Crybaby, Serial Mom, A Dirty Shame. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. We did post a picture of our guest on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscoen, and we want to close things out with Canadian rock and roll singer Bobby Curtola, and this is a song appropriate to today's show called Hitchhiker.
I'm a hitchhiker on the road to love. I've been waiting long on this lonely road, waiting for the one I've been dreaming of. For I'm a hitchhiker on the road to love.